This is CIUT, the Taylor Report, 89.5 FM in Toronto. I'm Phil Taylor, the host, and we are very fortunate. We're going to be talking today with an authority on Burundi, Rwanda, and matters in Africa are very relevant to Canadians. We have, because we're called upon to vote at the United Nations and to get involved in issues, and often the results aren't very pleasant. So we need to know about these matters. Our friend is Lebony, and Lebony has lived in the region, Rwanda, Burundi, knows it but like the back of his hand. Are you there, Lebony? Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Phil.
You have dramatic news, actually, that I don't think the world's heard in much detail, but very important leader, President Nkurunziza, who had actually, to the extent that people here talk about Burundi, the focus has been on his personality and his leadership. He seems to be highly regarded in some areas, and in North America and the UK, there is a great deal of hostility toward him. He has died in June of this year. Tell us, he had just stepped down as president. There had been an election, but this really came as a shock. Talk about him and what is going to happen now in Burundi.
So as far as President Nkurunziza, his death came as a shock to all of us. He was seen at a volleyball game the day before, looking okay. And according to authorities, he passed away due to a heart attack. And they tried to revive him. It didn't work. But one thing that's noticeable about this Pan-African giant, as I can refer to him, is he actually, when he was he got sick, he didn't try to go to Europe like most African presidents who end up dying. They tried to die in this their European hospitals. He went to a hospital that he built, him alongside the population. They built a hospital in Karuzi. And one thing that can be said about his legacy, very important, is, of course, if he's doing good for Burundi, the imperialists will not like what he's doing. The same way I grew up in school, my French school, where they taught me that Thomas Sankara was an evil, bad person. And I believed it until I went to YouTube in the 2000s and I saw what he did. And I see why they didn't like him. I see why they killed him. Same way I grew up not hearing anything about Lumumba. All I know, around 2000, I see a movie about him. And I'm like, wait, he's a great person. But because he's a great person, the imperialists, including Belgium especially, went ahead and killed him to terrible leader Mobutu, praising year after year. So the fact that they do not like, they don't like Nkurunziza means that he's doing what's good for Burundians and obviously what's not good for Belgians. And one thing that, one of the many things Nkurunziza did was he taught people how to really own our country, ourselves, without always begging the Belgium for help. That was a problem Burundians have had since we were colonized. And as you know, after 2015, when Belgium via Rwanda tried to do a coup d'etat in Burundi that he was able to repulse, which was the first time in history someone was able to fight a coup d'etat, we have a bloody history of coup d'etats, they put sanctions on everything, no aid. Actually, the sanctions had come before, but the country still, with our own local abilities, he was able to bring a nation together. And there was no famine, the economy stayed okay. And for the first time in the history of Burundi, we were able to pay for our own election without begging for a foreign country to pay for an election. Actually, we did two elections. One election was for a referendum for the constitution, to write it for Burundians, by Burundians, and the other election he paid for, we paid for, because I also contributed, was for the general election. First time in the history of the country, despite all the sanctions. And it shows you that this man was a man, once in a lifetime man for Burundi, because before him, every time there's a coup, we end up having genocides and bloodshed. You know, when Micombero did a coup back in the 70s, he ends up killing 500,000 Hutus, Hutu men, in the first genocide in the region. You know, when Buyoya does a coup against Melchior Ndadaye in 1993, it ends up in a bloody, long 13-year war with 200,000 victims, mostly victims of the military, against back to Buyoya's military. And this time around, 2015, another coup, and they were able to repulse it. There were about 1,000 casualties, which, if you compare 100,000 to 300,000 to 1,000 casualties, which are people who are attacking military camps, people who are throwing grenades at markets, a lot of terrorists coming from Rwanda, they were well fought off, and no war happened. Every whistleblowers from the United Nations say it, and you can see it, it's online. The same Burundi is about to go into a genocide. They're all predicting that, but people don't know. Pierre Nkurunziza brought harmony amongst Burundians, amongst ethnic groups. You know, there was no threat, nobody in Burundi. Obviously, there's some people outside Burundi who their brains are still stuck in the past. But people in Burundi, nobody thought there'd be a genocide. And guess what? No genocide ever happened. No war happened. He was able to prevent that and actually unify Burundians. So much so that he left Burundi with very, very, very strong institutions. Very strong. His role was to build up our institutions, as far as our history goes, to slow down the wars and build up strong institutions, to the point where when he passed away, can you imagine, in Africa, he passed away and they announced his death within 24 hours.
Yeah, that's phenomenal. And that's phenomenal. In Africa, you're quite right. I mean, actually, there's very few countries you can talk about where if you had a sudden death of a leader of his magnitude, that it doesn't turn into turmoil.
Exactly. I remember Kabila, when he died, it took about 2 weeks. Even Kim Jong-un, the father, when he passed away, like over weeks for them to announce because of the possible turmoil. Yeah. But Pierre Nkurunziza left extremely strong institutions. And this is even going to surprise you, perhaps. Yeah. They were so strong that when he passed away, I talked to friends in Burundi. Nobody had fear of anything happening, to the point where, by law, a new president has to be sworn in by the constitutional court. The new president, who just won an election, didn't even get sworn in for a week and a half. So the country had no president for a week and a half. Can you imagine, in Africa, no president, and there was no turmoil, no people were mourning in peace,
no community,
and there was no rush to have someone, you know, get sworn in. That's a lot of credit to someone who's built very strong institutions. And you have to understand who Burundi are. And this is where I give him so much credit.
Let me ask you, and we're speaking to Lebanese, and we're very grateful to be talking to him because he's a very knowledgeable gentleman. And can you just, there's two things I guess I have to ask you. How would you describe the ideology, the outlook of Nkurunziza, which is popular and supported by the mass of the population? And who is the new president, and to what extent is he fit the mold of Nkurunziza?
Okay. Nkurunziza is a victim His father was killed in the genocide of 1972. Nkurunziza.
If I can just point out, we do have, as in Rwanda, you have the same demographics. You have a Tutsi minority. You have a majority, and you also have Twa. And you often talk about Burundi and its cousin or brother, Rwanda, and it's the same demographics. And
exactly
with that, successfully in creating a peaceful community that can build one country, that's a great challenge. And Nkurunziza has been doing that. And I didn't mean to interrupt, but I want to make sure our listeners know that we're talking about a classic issue of Hutu and Tutsi in Burundi.
Yes. So before Pierre Nkurunziza, Hutus in Burundi, under the brutal regime of the UPRONA, Hutus were considered second-class citizens. Okay? The military was just all one tribe. If you go to jobs, NGOs, everything, it's only the minority tribe of Tutsis for 40 years. It was a brutal, which I refer to it as a brutal apartheid. But it was worse than apartheid in South Africa. Because in South Africa, they had apartheid, but they weren't getting slaughtered like Burundians. They weren't killing 500,000 people in 72. They weren't killing 80,000 people in a province called Nhega and Marangara. You know? So we had an apartheid and we had, we'll be slaughtered. And so he grew up in that era. And he tried to join the military, actually. And he was denied. He went to college, he tried to study economics. And they told him in university in Burundi, as a Hutu, you cannot study economics or finance. You can do sports or social work. So he ended up studying physical education because of the Hutu. And mind you, he has a Tutsi mother, but they still say, no, your dad is Hutu, so you're Hutu. So the university again was again mostly one tribe. And then when the coup d'etat happened in 1993, when Buyoya killed the first Hutu president, which ended up with the longest war, Pierre Nkurunziza had become an assistant to a professor of physical education at the university. And he was very loved by his students, very much loved by his students. So it's interesting because just last week, there was a big memorial built at the University of Burundi because there was a lot of young Tutsi terrorists back in the days called sans échec and sans défaite. Sans échec, which means without, I won't fail, basically sans échec to kill you. And they were in Bujumbura and they called upon those writings and all to clean Bujumbura of Hutus. And one thing that a lot of times in the genocides against Hutus that they do is they go against intellectuals. In 1972, they made sure they wiped out every Hutu professors, Hutu in high school men. They go after educated people, like education is a threat to them or for these extremists. And so they went and they slaughtered so many students at the university. And then Pierre Nkurunziza was beloved by his students. And he, and this is important to know about the new leader today, the new leader was also in school with him. And he escaped an assassination attempt. Pierre Nkurunziza, they came to kill him, and the students told him, "Professor, we heard that they're coming to kill you. Please run." He literally ran from his classroom window, fled, and he joined the rebellion. So same thing, he's the new president, Evariste, also fled at that time at the university from being slaughtered. And so Pierre Nkurunziza grew about that, and then him and the new president obviously joined the CNDD-FDD rebellion, which has a strong motto. Hopefully I can translate it well in English, that says, it's not ethnicity that brings brings about like wars and bad society. It's bad leadership. So that's the motto of them. When they were in the rebellion, him and the new president and the circle of friends, what today generals, they always said, we're not going to be Hutu Tutsis. We're going to be against bad institutions. And even amongst the Tutsi leadership before, it was so discriminatory because almost all the leadership came from one province of Bururi. So you had Tutsis of other regions who were being ignored as well. So it was a double discrimination. And so what they did in the rebellion, they said, what they're doing, we shall never, ever do what they're doing. And so today, until today, in everything they do, they show that every region is represented and different ethnic group and represented, and as well as men and women are represented. Even within the party, for example, they can't have the president from this region, and then the president of the Senate from this region, or the chief of the ruling party from this region, from the same region. No, they have to be from different regions because they say they never want to go back to exclusion policies. Mm-hmm. And so Peter Nkurunziza, when he came, mm-hmm. he brought about all that unity. They enforced it. Again, people forget his mother was Tutsi. Yes, who they are Tutsi. For him, this is natural, you know? And he was obviously it's not easy because people have to remember Burundi, all Burundians, is a war ridden. It's a war culture. Everybody in Burundi has been in war. Everybody in Burundi is war ridden. And so what happens is it's hard to change a society that's used to war and violence into a docile democracy. Mm-hmm. It's a very difficult challenge. And if you look at 2015 is a good example, when the failed coup on the violent protests with guns, if you don't agree with me, I have to topple you, coup d'etat. That was the Burundi since the 60s.
Yes.
And he put a stop to that.
Actually, yes, Burundi's in a region, as you say, this is how it's done, coup after coup after coup, and which raises an interesting question apropos of Canada, the United States, Europe. I mm-hmm. noticed that Burundi has a parliament. By the way, mm-hmm. many women represented in this parliament. You have opposite mm-hmm. parties. You have regularly scheduled mm-hmm. elections, and you mm-hmm. have your next door neighbor is a one man power system by a Ugandan general named Paul Kagame. He never gets mm-hmm. except praise and visits from Washington. But meanwhile, Washington and Ottawa are very critical of Burundi. I notice that they have a European Union and U.S. and U.K. and France have sanctions against, I think it's the Minister of Defense or the Interior Minister. Mm-hmm. So why are they so antagonistic? And then I guess the other side of the coin is, who are the friends of Burundi? How does Burundi function as an economy and politically in the world?
So this actually brings back to the first point I made earlier, I believe, about saying Burundi is for Burundians, and the interests of Belgium and Washington or Canada are not the same as the interests of Burundi people, and they never will.
Yes.
And they never will. So for them, Kagame, despite winning elections 99%, despite slaughtering 8 million people in the Congo, he's doing a good job that they sent him to do. When you refuse to do what they do, you're an enemy. They don't care that we have democracy. If you look at Tanzania has been called a communist country by the West for so long. Mm-hmm. They've been called communist, which was never the case, by the way. Why were they called communist? Because they were what the CNDD-FDD is in Burundi today. They were about empowering Tanzanians, speaking the local language, not just giving out the resources without having the people having a share. And so they were called communists because of that. If you read the news, Tanzania, Magufuli, a great leader, Mm. But if you read about him in the BBC or anything, he's just a bad, strict person. Why? Because he's not doing the bid for them because he's representing his people. So I'm not surprised that the neighbor to the north can run elections for life and they'll be fine. But when it comes to Burundi, they say, oh no, democracy, democracy. The beauty of Nkurunziza, what it did, again, there was a huge, and still continues, the media effort that they put up against this small country was tremendous, I'll use that term. One time I Googled Burundi and I Googled hell, and I got better results from hell than Burundi. It shows you the amount that they put the effort to go against this person who is transforming a country from a war culture with ethnic divisions. It was a solid unit, and they didn't like that because it's the Belgians who invented the tribes, Hutu and Tutsi, to divide and conquer.
Yes.
They invented. They were not tribes historically. It was just a classism, like in French, the feudal system where you had the bourgeois, the nobles, les nobles, and so on. It was just a class. That's it. You climbed up a class, and then you lose your money, you go down a class. That's it. So they transformed those into tribes. So that they can divide.
Yeah.
Our unity as Burundians is they don't like it. They don't like our unity because for them to bring a disorder. Need the power to bring disorder in the country for them to control their policy. Mm-hmm. And in Burundi, they don't like the. As a Burundian, I love it. And that's why Pierre Nkurunziza is a lion, a giant of Pan-Africanism. Uh-huh. You know, in Burundi, people don't go at night sleep feeling like they're second-class citizens. Hutus don't go feeling like they're second-class citizens. The Twas, who have had centuries of discrimination against, they're finally going to universities. And Nkurunziza, they're going to universities studying. And today, again, and thanks to the new president, they actually even have the first ever minister as a Twa, which is beautiful. Again, that's not something they can do. They don't even talk about it. Uh-huh. Our unity is what they don't like. And Pierre Nkurunziza, despite all the media, all the negativity thrown against him, he sacrificed his life for building a Burundi that's with strong institutions, with its own democracy, Burundian democracy for Burundi. And his legacy will be completely changing a country that's had repeated wars, internal wars and wars and genocides, to a country that survived a coup against from Rwanda and Belgium, mostly from Belgium, and still kept the country together and avoided bloodshed and avoided war. He's a giant. And, you know, he's built a strong, strong foundation for the future of Burundi. And one of the things I was told before, the reason why Kagame was excited to support the coup d'etat, which he did because the putschists, like God's one, whatnot, they're in Rwanda, it's well known. These are two small countries, they're in Rwanda, they're still there. It's because democracy is a threat to leadership.
Yes.
Because Burundi and Rwanda were all friends. The leaderships might not talk to each other, but the people, we talk to each other. We speak the same language. We're the same friends. We intermarry. And when Rwandans see that Burundians actually have a voice, it doesn't matter who you are in the world. Everybody wants a voice. Nobody likes dictatorship. The way Kagame has stifled down speech or whatnot. They can see us Burundians. Doesn't matter what tribe you are, what party you are. The campaign was amazing. People speaking their mind. It's beautiful. That's freedom.
Yeah.
And that's a threat to a very strict military government up north. And that's why he will keep trying to destabilize Burundi.
Yes.
And this leadership, actually, it's a funny thing that we're glad that we have a military person in government who knows how to respond to violence from the neighbor up north.
Yeah. This is CIUT 89.5 FM, the Taylor Report. We're speaking to Lebanese and authority on Rwanda, Burundi, and the whole region, the Great Lakes of Africa. And this has an important context now to the challenge to the new leadership of Burundi, because the United States is about to have an election, and it would appear that due to all the various crises that have fallen on the U.S., mainly of their own making, the corona matter and the economy's in bad shape, it looks like Trump will, at least he faces a good chance of being thrown out. I wouldn't be surprised, and it wouldn't blame the American people. But unfortunately, there's the matter of the Democratic Party and Mr. Joe Biden, former vice president to President Obama. The indications are that he would be bringing back into the government of the United States Samantha Power, who was very much involved in Burundi, Rwanda, and a very aggressive individual, and also Susan Rice, both of whom have a long working record of trying to overthrow the government of Burundi. So can you talk about who they are and what kind of problems we might see in a couple of 3 months?
So Samantha Power is an enemy of Burundi. She has declared it in her statements. She's part of supporting the coup openly in her statements. Samantha Power
one question I want to make sure I get in there. I seem to recall that in her last days in office under Obama, she was personally sponsoring an opposition radio station. Did I get that right?
So I'll get there. Samantha Power is sort of they say they were dating, or I don't know if it's the godmother of, she brought in an opposition. He's now under sanctions from the UN, actually. His name is Alexis Nduhije. She brought him in. She had him speak at Harvard. She was saying he's the next leader of Burundi. She put all her backing, her, and she got her big donors to back him because she believed he'd be the next president. And so he went to Burundi and he started a radio station, which ironically, that's the radio station where the coup was announced. You can put two and two together quite easily, and it's no surprise. And yes, the coup d'etat in 2015 was announced. The failed coup d'etat was announced at the RPA, Radio Publique Africaine, which is a radio that was owned by Alexis Nduhije, the same person who she believed would be the next president of Burundi. She backed him so hard, she only listened, like most of the State Department Democrats, they only listen to one side. They don't listen to two sides, and they make their opinion. And she only listens to what he says. He even said he's ready to kill the president. It's on tape. We have the tapes in the WhatsApps. And he's right now, he declared a war against Burundi, and he has what the UN people say is a terrorist group in Congo, Red Tabara, which he runs from Rwanda. And that's the person that she would put all her backing on. And so she's declared an enemy of Burundi. And the other person who is far more dangerous is Susan Rice. Susan Rice.
Mm-hmm. No, I just wanted to, it really is, I'm really glad you're making these points because, you know, subjectively, we all understand that President Trump is some very odd character. But in terms of basic policy, it's hostility for developing country like Burundi, and also for Tanzania. They have targeted countries that the U.S. administration, whether you call them liberals or not, they try to remove these governments and create obedient followers. I guess there's no other way to put that. And I don't see any change in their outlook. As far as I know, Samantha Power still has the same point of view.
It will never change. It will never change. And I tell people in Burundi, don't expect that to ever change. It will not. Yeah. And as a person from the region, whenever a Democrat is in power, it's chaos. Whenever a Republican is in power for the region, it's good. And I'm conflicted as a Burundian American, because in America, you find Democrats tend to say that they do more favorable policies. That's what they claim. And so, but when they go abroad, they don't want to have the same respect for policies for other countries. They turn into dictators. You know, we don't like you, regime change. Bernie Sanders called out Hillary in 2015, the 2016 primary. Her and the establishment, he called them out. He said very well, like, if I am president, this whole policy of regime change, I will stop it. Mm-hmm. He said that, Bernie Sanders.
That's one of the rare voices, yes.
I know, unfortunately, he's not running, you know, I'd hope so.
Yes. By the way, we have to throw in a very, very important detail here. And I'm going to have to ask you, Burundi announced that it is withdrawing from the International Criminal Court because the U.S. was behind targeting Burundi, wishing to bring Burundian leaderships before that court. Have they withdrawn? What is the status of that decision?
Burundi did a very great decision in 2016 to withdraw from this international corrupt criminal court. So corrupt that you have a year when you pull out that no case can be brought about you. A year went by and no charges were brought against Burundi. About a month later, or a few weeks later, the corrupt prosecutor, very corrupt prosecutor, came up and said, oh, we do have charges now. We filed them before the deadline.
Yes.
There's no proof. It's so corrupt. I mean, it's so corrupt. And those charges no court in the world can accept that those charges can stand, because Burundi withdrew completely, to the point where it's such a corrupt court that even the U.S. has withdrawn. Has never joined that court.
Well, of course. They say it doesn't apply to Western imperialist powers. You're not supposed to. I think it was Tony Blair said it was not, the court wasn't set up to prosecute good people like England and the United States. It was set up for the bad people.
Oh, sure, sure.
Colonial.
But yeah, so Burundi pulled out another great Pan-Africanist move by Pierre Nkurunziza. Mm-hmm. We can build our own courts. Mm-hmm. Are they perfect? Look at America. Look at the protests everywhere right now, because of the justice system is so broken, so ineffective. Okay, so you can't teach us about our justice system back home. It's an embryonic, we're in an embryonic democracy, but allow it to grow in our own way.
They do participate in the regional courts, right? They do participate in African Union courts.
Yeah, there's two levels, actually. There's an East African court, even, and there's a all African court, African Union court. It's funny you bring that up, because the Burundi opposition had brought up the case against Nkurunziza's third term to the East African Court, because Burundi's constitutional court validated appropriately that the third term should stand. They took it up to the East African Court, and the East African Court as well validated it. They said, yeah, the decision of the Burundi's constitutional court stands, which means they validated the third term. Was right.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they're trying to put in their puppets, who is now a resident in Rwanda right now, where he belongs probably, you know, but they're trying to put that puppet in.
It's very...
or her, and so, hence, they're still not happy. And I think I was saying earlier that Susan Rice is far more dangerous than Samantha Power when it comes to the Great Lakes region, because she's one of the architects of trying to make Kagame the god of the region, which we know it resulted in 8 million deaths.
Well, we know he must be a god. He doesn't live on the earth. And, he doesn't have to say what they want.
Nope. The thing is, they know it's a mistake. They know what they did was a mistake, but they don't want to own up to it. They want to fix it somehow and make it better. I don't know what they're trying to do, but they don't change, and they will not change.
By the way, Burundi. When you think about it, you know, Kenya is discussing, I would not be surprised when Kenya left the ICC, and it would be Burundi's leadership. Burundi has sort of set the standard of fighting this kind of neo-colonial phenomenon of this so-called world court, which is actually run out of Europe, and actually
South
Africans.
I knew a delegate who used to go to discussions at the UN Human Rights Council or the UN, and they'd have fiery debates about Burundi. And Burundi would speak so powerfully against imperialist powers, that after the meetings, you tell me the African delegates would come and say, "Oh, you guys are brave. We want to say that, but we can't say that." You know? And that, kudos, all that stems from Peter Nkurunziza's legacy. You know, all that stems from him.
Demonstrates to me that he led a broad, popular, basically a revolutionary movement, and it takes that kind of authority, you know, based on common struggle, to be able to stand up to the these world powers, the European powers, I should say, to be specific.
You know, to be able to do so, you have to fall on your own sword, like you say. Mm-hmm. He took a beating. Mm-hmm. He took a beating for 5 years, but he was really a child of the nation. He gave his life, everything, for the nation, and we're reaping the benefits. Yeah. Through our stability and our growing democracy. You know, it's very unfair for some of these Western nations to expect a democracy that's 10 years old to act like a democracy that's 400 years old. Mm. It's impossible. You know, our democracy has to grow in our own way. And he shielded us from all the interfering from the Belgium enemies that they put against Burundi. He shielded us. He took all the punches he took them while he molded a very, very strong society that's united, a very strong institutions that don't fall when there's no leader for a week and a half and nobody's worried one bit. Mm-hmm. He did all that. And he's the strong foundation he set a strong foundation for the future of the nation.
Lastly here, I want to ask you, we're entering a new phase here where people call it the new Cold War, and the United States is saying loudly and clearly that it is America first, and frankly, France, Germany, NATO, Canada, UK, they all express discomfort, but they all do what the United States asks, because the United States says it needs to be the leader in the world, the quotes, free world. But there are other states now, Moscow, Beijing, most notably. And Beijing has a term, they say, two terms. They say multilateralism, and they also say South-South, because after all, colonialism was in some ways overthrown, but it remains, in economic terms, pretty much the same structure. talk about how does Burundi, Nkurunziza's, those who follow, how they view this? Do they prefer a U.S. hegemony, or would they like to have a multilateral world? And how does the term South-South sound to you?
So, as far as Burundi goes, and I would say as far as most countries go, either partner is not as good. You want the less of the evils, basically. And what the Chinese have done is they were colonized for so many years, the Chinese. People forget that. So they understand how to work with Africans. And it's only come as a benefit to most African countries today. Most African countries are getting, are able to fend off cruel policies from the EU or whatnot, because they do have a second option now. That's actually better, because the option does not interfere in the politics. And I have to tell you, quite honestly, if you look at the history of coups in Africa, like the last two, Laurent Gbagbo and Muammar Gaddafi, they came after UN resolutions from the Security Council, before we didn't know about that. But now that you have China and Russia on the council, I can tell you right now, that saved Burundi. Because every single resolution that Samantha Power put in to put down Burundi's government, they stepped in and they respected the will of Burundians. They would listen to the ambassador of Burundi at the UN and tell him, what do you need? He says, don't vote for this. And they never once voted for a resolution that Burundi did not want to be voted on. That's a change in history. That's a very huge change in the history of this country, of the geopolitics. Because the time of when Congo was being destroyed, there was no Security Council backing or help. Basically, Belgium, US could do whatever they want. But now it's more difficult because of the Security Council that has China and Russia, which is only a good thing because it brings about balance. Mm-hmm. If China and Russia were not respecting the will of Burundi people, right now it would be a huge war, because they were trying to get a UN resolution. And it's funny, they were being sneaky, because Russia and China said after the debacles of Gbagbo and Gaddafi, they're never ever going to vote on a resolution that's not approved by the African Union again. And so what they were doing for Burundi, they were trying to be sneaky, saying, oh no, we only want to send some policemen. And you know, they'll send Navy SEAL policemen, probably, to take out the president. You know, but they shielded us. We're very thankful for them, for the Security Council, because without them, it would be impossible. Would have been impossible. So it's a good, and then also as far as neighbors, we were shielded heavily, partly by the Congo, Kabila, but mostly by Tanzania and Angola. Tanzania especially were huge shield. They know the region more than anybody else. They were the base of many rebellions from ZANU-PF to ANC. You know, they to even Museveni. They understand regional politics more than anybody else in Tanzania and in the region. And they're the strongest military nation in the region. And they gave they understood what was going on. They understood the way they're portrayed by the West until today. Tanzania is treated as though it's a failed state. They hate Tanzania, the Western media. But when you go to Tanzania, you see it. It's so developed. I think they were declared like a middle class recently by one of the big banks, which is in Africa, I don't know how many countries can call themselves middle class. You know, and it's a country that doesn't depend on aid, because they've always been shunned. And so what's happening in Burundi, they've been through it for decades. You know, Burundi will not get news, good news from the West. And I tell people in Burundi, don't expect that to ever happen. Let's continue the way we're continuing, being a Burundi for Burundians, continue Peter Nkurunziza's legacy, and it's a great foundation. And the new leader who is from the system that protected Nkurunziza the entire time. When the coup d'etat happened, he was in Burundi and they were there protecting the institutions. He was outside of the country, and these people, the same system protected the institutions and brought him back home safe. So the guy in power, they've been with Nkurunziza from the beginning of the rebellion. It's the same Pan-Africanist policies. And the country needs that, because only through those policies does the country stays solid, unified, all ethnic groups. We continued with a good on a good.
Well, Lebanon, our authority on the Great Lakes regions of Africa, we're very grateful for all this. I'm particularly pleased with what I find a very hopeful summary of Africa's ability to fight back against neocolonialism. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you for having me and allowing me to share.